two drunk drivers were drag racing and one cut over and hit me from behind at a dead stop. And I was hit at 100 miles an hour at a dead stop. And I went 60 feet forward, broke my tailbone on impact. And at that point, I basically was put on short-term disability for 4 months.
Life is going to give you challenges, struggles. It's going to force you to face your fears. Even though these may feel like your worst enemy, in truth, these are actually your greatest allies. My name is Lance Isios. Welcome to the University of Adversity.
Class is in session, about to learn a lesson in the game. We embrace the pain, take it and we make some change. Without scarcity, I don't know where I'll be. It's how we learn, and now it's your turn. Let's get it.
Welcome to the University of Adversity.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If this is your first time here, welcome to the family. If you're a regular listener to University of Adversity, welcome back. Guys, today's guest has a powerful story. This is one of those holy fuck, how did you survive moments. When I listen to it, I'm just like, wow. And although I knew her story, you know, to some degree, I didn't know to the full degree, and I was just blown away. And I'm just thinking like, wow, this is just amazing that she's able to not only survive, but thrive right now. And super, super inspiring. She's also one of my sisters in the Fit for Service Fellowship, the Aubrey Marcus Mastermind that I'm part of this year, as you guys know. So I'm going to be featuring one of them each week for the next 9 months. So Melissa Blinn is going to be number three. And we're going to be diving into her story in just a minute. A bit about her, she's fused her passion for health, wellness, and nutrition with her innate drive to help others. Having a strong background in holistic nutrition, physical fitness, and neuro-linguistic programming, Melissa understands the importance of choosing a healthy lifestyle, implementing a balance between mind, body, and spirit. Her company's name is Epic Love, and her mission is to motivate, inspire, and encourage women and men to take accountability of their health and their wellness. She's powerful, and what she's doing with her whole holistic approach, yet not overcomplicating things, is really awesome. So we got into all things adversity today. Surprise, surprise. Adversity is your friend. It's your ally. So as soon as you get comfortable with the challenges, the struggles, life will open up for you. Don't run away from it. Lean into it. That discomfort will give you a reward. It always has a gift. We got a lot of amazing things coming up, a lot of amazing guests, and a lot of inspirational stories. So get excited. Today's episode will blow your mind. And as always, make sure to subscribe. Make sure to leave us a review. Screenshot it, share it in your stories, whatever you can do to add value and share it with somebody that may need it. Melissa Blinn, ladies and gentlemen, coming right up. And we're on. Melissa, so glad to have you here. What's up?
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
You are going to be the feature number three of the Fit for Service, which I'm really excited about doing. Is that going to be having a chat with a lot of, probably it's going to be between 30 and 40 people. Or, wow. And I'm going to be doing one per week for the next 9 months, which I think will be really fun and allows me to really dive deep with you guys and kind of like not only hear your story, share it, and just kind of connect with the community. And it's super important because what I've been struggling with is trying to find my place in connecting. And with there's so many personalities, there's so many things, there's so many calls, it's like, all right, where do I focus my energy? Where do I pull back? Where's my place in that? And it's just super interesting and to have you on here. I know you have such a powerful story and what you're doing and everything. I'm super grateful to have you here. So let's just
start with the virtual hug.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Where are you at right now with everything? So obviously we're in a weird time. What is it, the 3rd of April today?
It is the 3rd of April today.
Okay, so when this airs, it's not going to be that long away. So it's probably going to be the same sort of time. Where are you at right now with everything? Like what's going on with this whole chaotic world right now in your mind?
I'm actually grateful for it. Ironically, I'm wearing my shirt that says grateful today because I am. I'm grateful for multiple reasons. I'm grateful for, you know, last year I really teed myself up to put myself in a really great financial situation as I was making some pretty large life transitions. And I made sure that I had a nice lump of financial funds in an emergency account if anything happened. And little did I know, the world would literally stop. And so one thing, I'm super fortunate financially. I really set myself up during this transition period and what the world's going on. So I'm very fortunate. I have my basic needs being, you know, taken care of right now, where a lot of people in the world don't. You know, a lot of people are unemployed and they're afraid, and we've seen hoarding going on and a multitude of things. So for me, I'm super grateful for that. I have abundance right now and I'm taken care of. And I'm also grateful for my health. Ironically, health is my number two value, and it's what I do and live and breathe for my life and my business. And I'm super grateful that I have my health right now, because a lot of people in the world right now are being challenged when it comes to their health and their wellness, hardcore. So I'm super grateful for my health. And I think also too, you know, I'm not scared or stressed out. You know, I know a lot of people are, but where I'm at in the world is I'm in this state of bliss and peace right now. And that's because my rituals and how I choose to see through my eyes and out into the world right now is hopeful. I have trust and I have peace. And a lot of that has to do with what I do on a daily basis to keep my view of the world and my internal state at peace, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting, because if you've done the work, you're prepared for this stuff. We don't just do this stuff for no reason. You know, like over the years, you know, people, whatever you think it's woo or whatever you think it's, it doesn't matter. But when shit hits the fan, like it has, you got to have the tools. And this is just, it was kind of like practice for the game, right? Like now we're in it. And are you showing up from love, or are you showing up in fear? And a lot of people are fear because they don't have the tools. Right. And I'm with you. I got this, like, this burst of empowerment, this feeling of like, oh fuck, it's time to step up. I can't hide anymore. I can't be dimming my light when people need it the most. So I almost felt more empowered when this happened. And I talked about this on the Aubrey call too. And, you know, a lot of people are going through different things about, you know, some people are in the shit, you know, some people, and some people aren't. And for me, I'm like, I've been in the shit, I feel like, for the last 9 months. Now I'm finally fucking awake, I feel like. So it's like, all right, what am I going to do with that?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah.
And these tools are so important. It's the full holistic package. It's not just what you eat. It's what you think. It's what you consume. It's the full meal deal, so to speak, right? So,
yeah, absolutely.
Do you see that with a lot of people? They kind of take one piece and not the other, and they wonder why the whole thing doesn't work in synchronicity? Or what is your experience with that?
Yeah, so, you know, first and foremost, like, I'll share one of my personal experience is that my wellness journey started when I was 19 years old, 20 years old. And at that time, it started with my physical health. I was diagnosed with cancer at 18. I was involved in a major car accident at 20, broke my tailbone on impact. So at that point, my physical body was being challenged, right? So there was something going on with my physical state that I needed to take a hard look at. So that's when I really dived into my physical health. And it was through personal training, you know, all these different modalities for my physical health. So
yeah.
I think one of the things that's really important right now is most people, unfortunately, don't have the circle, right? Like I like to call it the holistic approach, right? The whole circle. And that's okay, right? Like, instead of shaming ourselves or wishing we were somewhere else, it's like, what can you choose to, what area of the bucket can you choose to focus on right now that can have an impact on you in your mental state, your physical state, and your soul? Like, what can you do? And for some people right now, Lance, It's just taking their ass and going for a fucking walk around their block and disconnecting from the noise of the television because they're scared as hell. And that has to be enough for them right now. So it's really that simple that we need to give people around us the permission to find that simplistic part. Whereas you and I have been on this journey, and with Aubrey and everyone for Fit for Service, we're very fortunate. Some of us have been on this journey for years.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of tools in our toolbox. But for people that don't, I think the most important thing is picking one thing that you can simplify right now that is going to support you when it comes to your health and wellness, and not making it so complicated right now, because it's too much. It'll overwhelm people, and they'll just say, fuck it, I give up. And that's when people just go right back into that cycle, that vicious cycle. And I know you know that.
Yeah.
You know, I say less is best for sure.
Yeah. It can get overwhelming, especially, on social media where everybody's got an opinion.
Right.
everybody knows everything, and it's good and bad. It's a great time to learn. It's a great time to explore, but at the same time, it can be very contradicting. One person says one thing, the other says another, and it can get very confusing to make you not want to do anything.
Totally. Or overwhelm you, for sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%.
So what I like about you is that you've been through a lot of shit, and you know what you're doing, and I admire your courage. You always really step up and really have, you know, you're a leader, and you're helping a lot of people, but it hasn't been easy for you. I know that. So I want to dive in a little deeper into your story. I know you touched on it, you know, so from when you're 18, walk us through, I don't know how deep or how far back you want to go, but whatever you feel had the most impact on your life now, let's dive into that. Like, what do you feel was a pinnacle moment for you that really started to change your journey?
The first thing that comes to my mind that was like a pivotal moment that I really started to look in the mirror, as I like to call it, and started to take really radical responsibility for my life was when I was involved in my car accident. It wasn't even when I was diagnosed with cancer, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I was 18 when I was diagnosed with cancer, and it was ovarian cancer to be specific. And, you know, I was, okay, you know, the likelihood of having kids, you know, I was told possibly can't have kids. And I was like, okay, it really wasn't a big thing. And so I really didn't even make life changes, or it didn't even impact me at that point, right? It was like that knock that Aubrey talks about. And I ignored it. And at 20 years old, I was at a dead stop in Laughlin and waiting to turn into a hotel. And two drunk drivers were drag racing, and one cut over and hit me from behind at a dead stop. And I was hit at 100 miles an hour at a dead stop. And I went 60 feet forward, broke my tailbone on impact. And at that point, I basically was put on short-term disability for 4 months. And I was obviously given the opportunity to take narcotics. And at that time, I was always against narcotics because both of my parents are addicts and had been addicts my whole life. And so it was one of those things that it was modeled for me. And it was like, hey, I don't want to go there. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. So I wanted to get better. And sometimes when you ask the question, as you know, the teacher appears, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And I was introduced to Reiki at 20 years old. And Reiki is a form of energy healing. For those of you that don't know about it, and this woman was introduced to me, and I was like, sure, I'll try anything. And when I had my first Reiki session, I lost my shit. I was hysterical crying. Like, I felt this an immense surge of energy and burning go right through my body. And about three sessions that she did with me, I was up walking. I had no pain. And I was like, okay, I just drank the Kool-Aid, and what the hell just happened? And I started practicing yoga at that time. I was getting ready to turn 21. I started practicing yoga. And so I just started getting curious about everything in my life. I started getting curious about why was this happening to me? It was happening for my evolution and my growth. obviously, as I knew. So I just started getting really, really curious. And that right there was the catalyst for me to, you know, take radical responsibility for creating the life that I had. And again, coming from, you know, two parents that were full-fledged drug addicts, I was placed in a foster home for a little while as a little girl. I was sexually molested by my uncle. So I had a lot of trauma. It was, you know, my body from a young age was hardwired for chaos, for instability, for dysfunction. You know, my first husband verbally and physically abused me. I mean, I was a typical model of repeat everything that was modeled for me. And so for me to, you know, have multiple, you know, health-related diseases and incidents that happened within less than a two-year time frame, I was invited to take responsibility for creating my life. And that was my window for me to do something different. And I owe my life to that woman. And unfortunately, she passed away about 4 years ago. But she was the teacher. As you know, in the Fit for Service, we're going into the mentor, right? And she was my mentor, you know. Mm-hmm. And I have a huge part of my heart to thank that for her. And where I am today is a big part of why, because of her.
Wow. It's hard for me to wrap my head around you going through that stuff. Like, first of all, having parents that are addicts, like, wow. I can't even imagine the feeling of that, because, you know, sometimes this is what we do is, like, I think about the stuff that I've gone through and then I hear something like that and I'm like, wow. Like, that is, you know, you can't help but compare stories. Like, you know, you
for sure.
Some are worse than yours. Some are not. And it's like, I've had that sometimes when I'm just like, wow, like, I don't know if I could have gotten through that. And because of the road that you ended up, it's very, looking at that, the odds were so stacked against you that you would have ended up either dead or in the gutter somewhere on drugs because, well, first of all, the people that are raising you are addicts.
Yep.
And this, it's like, and the trauma and the accident and all this stuff, it's almost like, how did you even get out of that? Like, it's crazy. I mean, it's.
Yeah. I mean, to be like quite honest, at some point, you know, and, you know, let's go deep, right? So I'm really transparent, right? So at the time, you know, all of this was happening. So I raised a child, my ex-husband, I raised a child from the time I was 13 years old to 20. Yeah. So during high school, I was raising a child and I got married at 18, divorced at 20, and kind of just again repeated the cycle that I saw that was modeled for me. And I was, you know, I lived in Vegas. I was working at Bank of America, you know, doing stuff at banking. I was in management. I was a model. And then I was a stripper for about a year. And so I started hanging around with women that were prostitutes. And so I was, during the day, I was boss woman at a bank, you know, and mom raising a kid. And then on the weekends, I was out taking my clothes off for money. So I was living this duality of a life. Wow. It was like, I was, my subconscious was like, kind of, you know, pushing and pulling at me to repeat the cycle, right? And so, but then on the conscious part of me, it was like, no, do the right thing, you know, get a really good job, make something of yourself. I graduated with honors. I was always really smart. So it was like part of my conscious was pulling me, but then yet a lot of the behaviors, the subconscious was doing everything it could to pull me. And so how I got out of that was the pain. It was loud. The pain was loud. The pain from, you know, my failed marriage, you know, to the cancer, to breaking my tailbone, to I was 20 at the time when I was hanging out with a bunch of prostitutes and strippers. A gentleman attempted to murder me. A man broke into my home and tried to kill me and kill another girl. So my life was threatened. So yeah, I was almost. This individual ended up serving 10 years in prison for attempted murder. So again, the noise just kept getting louder her and louder and louder. And so finally, I said, enough's enough. Like, this is not the life that I want to live. This is not who I am. I don't want to go down that cycle. And so I just started doing a lot of work from, you know, I would say probably the first internal work that I started to do was I studied Kabbalah. So remember Madonna did it back in the day. Kabbalah was like this big thing. And they said it's Jewish. I studied Kabbalah for like 4.5-5 years. And that literally was probably my first eye-opening experience to spirituality and being radically responsible with changing my views and my beliefs and, you know, healing my relationship with my mother, healing my relationship with my father. Like, it all came full circle. And it was a lot. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Wow. Okay, Reiki and this cabal. I just want to have for the listener the timeline here. Yeah. So where are we at with, when did you do Reiki?
I did Reiki when I was 21.
Okay. So, and then when did the Kabbalah stuff?
I started studying Kabbalah when I was, let's say around 22, 23.
Okay.
So shortly after that.
So you're, wow, that environment. So you really, it was the energy style working that really started to shift things for you. So yeah. I just love to kind of get the pinpoint of like why all of a sudden did you start thinking differently? Like why did you make these changes? And that shows, because anybody that thinks this stuff is bullshit, it's our fucking bodies. We're energy. So like you need to shift that energy somehow. So that goes to show that in order to make that change, your energy needs to operate at a different level. So okay, so Reiki. Let's talk about Reiki here, because I'm pretty new to Reiki. I've recently done a little bit, and I love meditation. I love all of this stuff, but I didn't understand Reiki. I know that it's about taking source energy and applying it to you.
Yep.
But here's the thing that I'm sure you'll be able to clear this. How do we know if that person actually can do that? Like, I love the idea and I believe in it. I know it's a Japanese thing, like, but what gets me is like, how does it, like, why does it work? Can you walk us through it a little bit? Forgive me if it's a silly question. I sometimes ask these because I want to break it down for the listeners that haven't heard of it before.
Yeah. So there's different levels of attunement. So when an individual goes to get Reiki certified, so I believe there's 2 or 3 different certifications that you can go through, and they call it, the term they use is, you know, attunement. Yeah. And so basically the individual goes through the process of really tapping into their energy sources through their body, through their chakras, through the points in our body, and really does what, again, it's called the tuning, and it clears out your energy and opens up like this portal to connection to source to come through me and be able to connect to your body energetically and move the energy through your body and out through your body. So like, if people are watching this, so for me, because my tailbone was broken, I had a lot of stagnant energy around the break, right? Around that point in my lower lumbar, as well as when I had cancer. So all down in my pelvic area was just stagnant energy and just toxic energy. Mm. And so what she did was, is she literally took her hand, placed it at the base of my spine, didn't physically touch me, but just put her hand down the spine and literally went up and down my spine multiple times, moving the energy up through my crown chakra, up out through my head. And I could immediately feel this burning, tingling sensation as if I stuck my finger in a light socket.
Really?
I'm not kidding you. Wow. I was like, what the fuck just happened? And again, for me, never having exposure to anything like this or having no idea what it was, I was, first of all, more than anything, I was curious and I was open and I didn't take pain pills. I didn't want to get addicted to pain pills. I didn't want to take narcotics. And so I was open to anything. And so it's literally where an individual, they are open and they have the ability to channel energy through themselves and move stagnant energy through an individual's body to move it out of their body when it's stagnant. Because we all have stagnant energy. You know that. We talk about it all the time.
So you'd, so somebody that's has resistance to it will literally block themselves from getting it.
100%. Absolutely. For sure. Absolutely.
Just like anything as well.
Yes, absolutely.
If you're resisting it, you're literally turning off the tap. And that goes with everything too. Abundance, manifesting, even meditation. If you're not allowing yourself to let go, you're not going to allow yourself to even get to the state that you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'll be honest, like growing up in an environment where trauma was like at every step of my childhood, you know, for me to learn how to surrender, to not control, was something that I struggled with for a lot of years. And there are still to this day parts of my life that I'm like, I see myself attempting to, like I call it latching on or holding on to, you know, and out of fear or control or something. But all that is just old shit comes up of like, hey, because again, as a child, I learned at a very young age that I needed to do whatever I needed to do to protect myself in survival mode. So I had to do everything to attempt to control the external situation to protect myself as a little girl. And so as we get older, tapping into that and really working on surrendering and practicing to let go is something that every human will struggle with at some point in time in their life, whether they want to admit it or not. We will all be faced up against learning how to let go of something or someone. And it's hard. It's definitely not an easy thing to do, but we know that the harder that we grip onto something or the harder we resist to it, the heavier it gets in our body. Yeah. You know, the louder, I like to call it, the louder that knock is going to fucking get. Like, okay, you don't want to answer it this time. And again, back to fit for service, right? Like we talk about it. You're not going to answer the call, you know, and step three of the hero's journey, refusal of the call. You may get another opportunity at some point down the line, but you know it again, who knows what's going to happen, you know? So it's really, really important to practice surrendering something or some area of your life as best as you can.
Oh man, surrender is so important. That light, that lightness is so important. Even though we desire these goals and these things so much, that too much is actually defeating what you're trying to create. Like
100%.
The softness, the balance is what I've noticed. Things always unfold for me when I fucking let go. Like when I stop trying to say that it has to be this way. When I go, you know what? I have my goal. I'm honestly going to trust that it's going to work out. And it always fucking does. Always. Like, yeah. And the best stuff comes when always. I kind of forget about it. And then it just like, oh, isn't that interesting? It just shows up now. Yeah. And let's talk about refusing the call. Because I feel like I've been doing that my whole life. And I use that. I feel like alcohol was my refusal of the call because I knew in my heart what I am capable of. And it's my way of hiding. And I feel that, oh, whatever the call, you know, when you know intuitively that you can be a better and we know that we're in service. We obviously know we're leaders. That's why we came together in the groups and like the fit for service. Everybody has a gift to give somebody, like Godsey talks about. Everybody has that unique thing. And it's been talking to us our whole life. It's been like, hey, you know, I'm here. No, I don't fucking like you.
Yep.
So you're gonna have this instead. And we do these things to cover them up and hide them until eventually, you know, it's loud. And I think a lot of people have been refusing the call. How has that been for you? Like, where are you at? And what are some things that you feel now that you've become more in tune with your body, mind, body, spirit, soul? What are some things that you're navigating through that you feel that you've been refusing or that you haven't stepped into fully?
Oh, that's very clear. And I share this very publicly with Fit for Service, especially. You know, for me, my most recent refusal of the call experience that happened to me was in September of this last year. And for me, how it showed up was, so again, hearing my story, you know, being successful, you know, I'm super fortunate, I'm driven, I have my business, and, you know, I've been really successful. And when I got divorced, you know, my ex-husband said, you're never going to amount to anything. And, you know, you're always going to have to rely on a man. And I heard that and I was like, oh, really? Fuck you. Watch me. And what that did lit such a strong fire underneath my ass to where for the last going on almost 20 years, actually, and yeah, it is 20 years now, I have been independent and on my own. I've not asked for help. I never allowed a man to help me. I never allowed for support. And I always blocked that energetic to receive that, right? So for me in September of last year, the last refusal of the call for me was, I was in a relationship long distance, and this gentleman, his name is Scott. I met him when I wasn't looking. You just talked about when you surrender it, right? The universe just goes, hi, here. This amazing relationship came into my life who, you know, early on in the relationship, 2 months into our relationship, my father died. And actually my dad's anniversary death is tomorrow. And this gentleman flew me up to spend the last 2 waking hours with my father to say goodbye to my father and help me bury my father. So this individual just showed up and supported me through the whole year that we were together. And at the time that in September, he said, I want to put you up in an apartment. I want to move you to California to be closer to me and my daughter. And what did I say? I said, nope, this independent woman does not allow anyone to take care of her, or I'm not going to ask for help, and I'm not going to be dependent on a man. And so how that ended up happening is he immediately felt rejection. He immediately felt that I wasn't willing to take the next step to our relationship and what he needed, and I refused the call. And so how it's played out for me is we're now been apart for about 4 months, going on 5, and you know, I'd be lying if I said I'm not still grieving to some degree, because I refused the call into somebody that just has been everything that I've wrote about in a journal as a partner of what I want and who I want to share my life with and my family. This man had every single quality that I was looking for. And because I was afraid of it, right? That's usually why we don't jump. There's a fear. So instead of love or fear, I did choose fear. And so it's been,
what were you afraid of?
I was afraid of being dependent on him.
Because of what you're...
what I had experienced. Yeah, absolutely. And also too, the other fear, in all fairness, you know, he was married many years ago and he's a single father, and his ex-wife just, she just was not a good person, and she hasn't been in her daughter's life since her daughter was 2 years old. And he just supported her financially and took care of her for many years. And I never wanted him to feel that I was with him for his money, because he's very successful. You know, I'm super fortunate. He's actually has been an investor in Epic Love. You know, he's one of my top investors in my business getting off the ground. Like, so I never wanted him to feel like I was with him for money when I loved him. And so that was a big reason why I also declined it, because I wanted to prove to him that I could do it on my own. And I actually did. I live part-time in California now, 20 minutes, not even 15 minutes from his house, but I moved out to California close to him. And I'm like, see, I did it. I didn't need your help. I did it all on my own. So yeah, it was just the fear of him, you know, being dependent on him and asking for help. Like, if I were to be honest, like giving myself permission to ask for help or allowing somebody to support me, not to where I'm not working or not doing, but the little things that you know, we don't allow people to do sometimes because we get so independent, and it can almost be a demise for us. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah, that's where I refuse the call for sure.
So very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry about your dad. I know that's never easy. Lost mine almost 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. I'm curious, what are you doing towards allowing that sort of, you know, because you want to be this independent person.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing towards allowing that to dissolve as being like, okay to ask for help without worrying about your ex, because it doesn't matter what he thinks. Like, what do you do now? Are you working towards kind of softening that a little bit and allowing, like, what do you do though? Like, what do you do to practice that? Because there's a lot of people out there who have been hurt in relationships and someone said something, a parent, a loved one, whatever. And they're just like that fuck you mentality.
Totally.
You know, that's good to an extent, but then it's like, all right, well, where does that hurt you? Where is it a hindrance? You know, what do you do about that?
So one of the things that I'm really good at is I have a really solid journal practice. I mean, it is one of my foundations that are one of my morning rituals that I do every single day. And for the most part, it's one of the things that I do is I make sure to acknowledge what I'm afraid of. And I write out the scenario of what's the worst that can happen. And what am I afraid? Like, what's the worst possibility? So what that does is it cues my unconscious mind to really peel back that layer of that onion of what's underneath the surface, right? So, because a lot of the times I can say something, but it's deeper than that. You and I know this, like it can tend to go layer after layer. So with my journaling practice, I make sure to journal for at least 15, 20 minutes. And what happens is over, and Godsey talks about this, your subconscious starts to take over. So whatever you're afraid of or what's underneath that usually starts to come up to the surface as you write through it. And so writing for me has been a really good way to face that. And so, great, I wrote about it. Now what, right? So, okay, there it is. What do I do with it? And so I asked myself, I call them butt pucker moments. And it's something that a lot of people that know me, I use this a lot in my coaching. And I use this as well for myself. I'm like, what is the one butt pucker action I need to take to step me closer to love versus fear? And it's usually something that scares the shit out of you that you know you need to do, but you've been avoiding to do. And so what is that one action? So for me, like with this exact situation, 2 weeks ago when I was in California, I was out there living there for 2 weeks because I'm 2 weeks there and 3 weeks in Vegas. I knew with all of this going on with coronavirus, it was right when the coronavirus had launched. And like I said, I have a good amount of money in my savings to live off of, and I'm safe financially for like a good 3 to 6 months. But I also knew, like you said, this is an opportunity to level up. And so for me, it's like, hey, I'm ready to put more money and invest into my business and build my brand and do what I really love. I have the time. So my butt pucker was, it was around asking help for a loan financially. It was saying, hey, I believe in my business. I believe what I'm doing. And I need this financially to take my business to the next level. And I did do that conversation with my ex. And I was hysterical crying through that conversation. And I remember saying, like, I'm embarrassed to have to ask for help. Like, it is like a visceral reaction. And I knew that as I was doing that and actually physically doing that act, I'm literally rewiring my brain to feel safe to communicate. So when I'm doing that act that's uncomfortable, I am learning that I'm safe to do something different, to get a different outcome, right? So a lot of the times we have that fear, that resistance, because we don't want to go there or we have that stop. But when we choose to try something new or do something different that's uncomfortable, because see, the uncomfortable and the unfamiliar is in the conscious mind. The familiar, what we're used to and what is safe, is in the subconscious mind. That's why we do it over and over and over again, because it's gotten us results. It's kept us safe, right? We're familiar with it. So when I tell people, what is that butt pucker thing that you can do? What is that one thing that you can do that stretches yourself just a little bit today to get you out of that comfort zone, to start to rewire your brain into going there, right? It's no different than riding a bike. You get on a bike, it's unfamiliar, it's unsafe. You fall, what do? You either never get back on again, or you get back on and you practice. and you practice. And the more you practice that, so for me, it's communication. So to be really crystal clear, to soften that place in me is being vulnerable to communicate my fears, my insecurities. And when I communicate those, because when I journal and it comes to the surface, it's my responsibility, nobody else's, to articulate those, to share those, and to help other people around me know what's coming up for me. Not from a place of expectation for them to fix it, but for them to understand why I'm acting the way that I'm acting and what I'm afraid of. So in vulnerability. So for me, communication has been really one of my big butt pucker places to be, to soften, versus putting that wall up or that guard up, or I like to call shoving everything underneath the rug syndrome and avoiding it, whether it's avoiding it through alcohol or drugs or sex or numbing. For me, it's communication. It is the fabric of one of the pillars that I teach in my business when I coach. And it's something that I practice very due diligently within myself as I journal, but then also with who I communicate with. And so that was a big moment for me 2 weeks ago to ask, because I knew on the other side of it, it could have been, he could have said no, and there could have been right rejection, or he could have said yes and supported me. And of course, he supported me.
That's, it's not easy to do.
No. It's, I mean, think about the communication piece for you, right? Like, and I talk about that, like, it's a really big thing that I emphasize on when it comes to boundaries, when it comes to growing and evolving. The more you can understand yourself and understand where your blocks are, what's coming up. And again, journaling is a really powerful technique that I strongly encourage people to do. You get to curate and peel the layer back into yourself. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, we do a good job of fucking shaming those parts.
Yeah.
But it's not meant to be shamed. It's meant to be embraced and say, hey, guess what? I'm human too.
Yeah. That brings me to the next thing, is that trauma.
Yep.
Okay. Cause there's, everybody's got a different degree of trauma, right?
Yeah.
You have on the spectrum of somebody that's had a lot. Now I really want to unpack that. How have you dealt with some of the hardest, some of the hardest traumas? Because you mentioned some, and physically, mentally, all that. How have you dealt with it? And do those traumas still haunt you, or have you got to the point where you've allowed them to dissolve through whatever way? Walk us through trauma, because this is just so important.
Yeah. So you're right. Everyone does have some form of trauma. The spectrum can be small. I mean, trauma could be the dog died, you know, and that was the kid's best friend their whole life. I mean, the spectrum can be, you know, wide and long. But the thing is with trauma is I like to say to have a beautiful dance with her and learn to have a dance with her, because it is exactly that. It is a dance. And when you think that it's fully dissipated, right? And I like to use this analogy. The charge of a situation may dissipate a little bit. So where you're experiencing a situation that once, you know, triggered you physically, right? Like, we call it the fight or flight freeze, where if there's an external event that happens, if that trauma still has the real heightened sense on you, you can be triggered easily and have a physiological response easily within your mental and physical state. But as you start to soften and do some of the techniques and practices with trauma to go back, there's a lot of techniques that I do and have been done, that's been done on me, to work on my trauma and things that I do every day and things that I've worked on myself. But I like to say that the charge dissipates. It's not as sharp. It's not as jolting. It's not as sudden. You know, for me, like, the first time that I probably had a very good kiss of my trauma was in 2012. And so for me, my trauma, or how it shows up, is loss. That's a big one for me. So for me, the trauma is, it's not the physical abuse. It's not the sexual abuse. It was loss. And so again, my dad being gone, my mom being gone, like this whole dichotomy of growing up. So in 2012, I went through a really bad breakup, and this all happened within 7 days. I had a really bad breakup. I moved. I was involved in a pretty bad car accident. One of my clients died of cancer, and one of my best friends got married. So with all in less than 7 days, I had these large life incidents occur within me. And so at that point when I felt loss hardcore to that degree and I didn't understand it and I didn't know what it was, I drank until I couldn't feel anymore. That was my go-to. My go-to was I will drink until I cannot feel the pain anymore. And I own that very clearly now, because I didn't understand it. And so then, and fast forward probably about 3 years later after that, I had somewhat of the same situation happen, but different faces. And then it was like, oh, I remember you. Is this how I want to handle it again? And at that point, I went and I got NLP certified, neuro-linguistic programming, to really get to the root of where a lot of my trauma stemmed from, you know, the beliefs and the values. And that happened. I did that in 2016, and that was a game changer for me. And so fast forward, this last year, this last November, my roommate was killed in a fatal accident. Let me kind of paint a picture. In less than a year time frame, I lost a job. One of my boyfriends got deployed to Africa. He moved out and deployed to Africa. And my roommate died from a fatal car accident. And so I had all this trauma within less than 9 months. So if you look at the dichotomy, loss, 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 right? Lost my job, lost my boyfriend, lost my roommate, lost my dad, all within a year. And so what do I do now? I dance with her. And what that looks like for me is I sit every day, I'm in silence with myself for close to an hour to 2 hours. And I love it. And safest place that I have ever been in my life. And it is the most comfortable place for me. And so like with everything going on right now in the world of social distancing, it doesn't scare me. I love the quiet. I love the silence. There's so much healing that happens in that time that we're with ourselves and giving ourselves that permission. And I don't make my feelings wrong anymore, Lance. Like if I'm angry, I write about it. I'm fucking angry and I'm allowed to. If I'm scared, I'm allowed to be scared. If I'm, you know, whatever comes up, I allow it to come out. I write about it. I talk about it and I let it move through me in the way that it wants to be expressed. So because I do that now, I don't have to numb it or avoid it. I have the tools to get me through it.
If somebody out there is listening and they're sort of new to this whole world of personal development, went through trauma, they don't know really how to do it, they're being prescribed meds or they're going to therapists or whatever they're doing to try and do it, you know, What would you recommend for somebody that's been through trauma that doesn't really have a lot of knowledge in all this stuff? Like, and what are some do's and don'ts? Because you've obviously experienced more trauma than most people. Let's call a spade a spade here.
Yeah.
So for sure. Like for fuck's sakes, like that's what you've been through is blows my mind. And I'm still trying to comprehend it, how you're even alive. Like it's amazing. Like,
'cause I got a lot of work to do in this
life. It's still like, it's like, wow. Like you were meant to be here. You were meant to fucking be here and you're powerful. And I admire that. But for the people who are unaware of their gifts yet, they've gone through trauma. What advice would you give to them?
The first advice I would say is, be patient with yourself. It's not a destination. It's the journey. And I'm going to be 40 next year. And so I say that very openly, that I've got another 50 plus years in this physical body, crossing my fingers. And so I know there's no outcome, right? I know like there's no final destination. Like, so I practice patience with myself. So that patience piece is like, I give myself permission to make mistakes. I give myself permission to have a curiosity mind to learn and to grow. And that falls into the next piece of advice is ask for help. Be willing to ask for help. Get curious. Whether that's getting curious around, you know, tools to work with your mindset, whether it's tools, you know, to change the way that you eat, right? The food that you put in your body. We know the science shows that what you put in your body can and have an impact on your mental well-being, you know. So ask for help, you know, and allow yourself. I don't like to make a recommendation what area to choose first. That's that individual's responsibility to really tap in to go, if I'm going to ask for help, what do I need right now? Because it's going to change, right? So I, for me, when my accident and my cancer occurred, my calling was physical health. I started to go to the gym, right? I started practicing yoga. I started moving my body physically and connecting to my physical body. I didn't know shit about mental state of being or anything around my mindset at that point, you know? And I really wasn't that curious at that point in my life. I was just worried about the physical. So the first thing is be patient with yourself. And the second thing is have curiosity, get curious, and whatever kind of pulls at you or resonates with you or you want to seek, go seek that out and ask questions and learn about it and be willing to have help. I'm sitting here because I've asked for a lot of help when it comes to my trauma, you know, from, you know, this last experience with my roommate dying and my boyfriend. My roommate died and my boyfriend and I broke up 4 days later. From 2 weeks from her dying, I put myself right into grief counseling. I started, you know, working back with my NLP coach. Like, I journaled it every day and sat in meditation 2 hours a day. Like, I reached for help because it was like, I don't want to do this alone. I can't do this alone, and I need help. I made sure to actually ask for help. I made sure to reach out to people that I knew in the health and wellness arena that could help me. And I paid for that help. You know, like I said, I went to grief counseling twice a week. I went to, you know, my NLP coach once a week. So for those that are out there, ask for help. Ask for help, you know, really ask for help and get curious because we're meant to do this together, right? Like, look at us. There's 100 of us in Fit for Service. All of us are mentors for each other. Aubrey's our mentor. Caitlin's our mentor. Kyle's our mentor. Godsey's our mentor. We can ask them for help at any time.
You know what the cool thing is about it too, is that when you're a coach, you actually learn a lot from your students too. Like, yeah. I know that they're learning a lot as well.
Yeah.
Just because, like, the whole experience itself on how to do the thing, there's no right or wrong way. And there's all these personalities. There's these things, and then there's this coronavirus. It's like how people react. You know, the coaches have to feed off the energy of everybody too, yeah. Right? And if the energy was all fucked, how would they do their job properly? And it's really interesting because I know that they're learning as well. The teacher becomes a student, the student becomes a teacher. It's a beautiful synchronicity there. And allowing that to unfold the way and not putting labels on how it should be is beautiful.
Yep.
And for me personally, the first part of the experience, I haven't participated as much as I probably wanted to when I started, but it's also a long year. I think we also have these expectations about life, about things in general, that we're supposed to do it one way or we've failed. And I think with a community of 100 people and different perspectives, the navigating through that itself, aside from the curriculum and the stuff that we do, is an amazing journey. Just figuring out what place do we have? What's my role in this? Where do I focus more energy on? Where do I pull back?
Yeah.
And for myself, I was so fucking lost within my own self, figuring shit out from 2020. Like, I had a crazy start to this year. Drinking, just trying to get myself out of my own hole that I didn't have the space to even connect and try and build relationships. And now I finally feel like, holy fuck, now's the time to cultivate. Now is time like to really, because relationships are going to be the thing that propels or creates whatever we want to create down the road, the ripple effect. If you don't have relationships, you don't have anything. So
my number three value.
It's so important, and you don't know what's going to come out of it. But if you resist and go, I'm good with myself and what I'm doing, you're like, you're being a fool, because you don't know what you're robbing other people from and what they're robbing, you're not getting as well. So I just think it's beautiful. And getting to know different personalities and hearing your story of what you've gone through is fucking incredible. Thank like, you. I really admire you for it. And that's why it's interesting, because as you're on this journey, and for me as well, I'm just trying to like kind of relate. It's easy for me to go back to that old persona. Like, we never really get rid of that. Like for me, for instance, the bartender guy or the athlete guy, you know, I'm on this journey now. I know I've pivoted. I know I'm in a different direction, but I still dance and toy, go back and forth. And it's so easy to fall back into that. How do you, now that you're on this path, do you still have parts of you that kind of go back to that old you and try and pull you in like, ah, it was fun over here. What are you doing? Like, you know, those conversations like 1 foot on the gas, 1 foot on the brake. Yeah. Do you ever have that? Like, how do you deal with that? Because I think a lot of people think you need to just all of a sudden be this one way and it goes away and you just, that's it. Like, how do you deal with like the push and the pull?
Well, it's funny that you say you go back to what's comfortable or what you know, like that one athlete or that bartender. That's your unconscious mind going back to what you know.
Yeah.
That's how the brain works, right? Like, so we go back to what's familiar, what's safe, what has produced us results, right? Like, if I do this certain thing based off results, this is what I've got.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm going to keep going there. So for me, you know, to answer your question is, the one area that I would have to say that I have to be very hyper conscious of is in my intimate relationships for me. You know, I have to be hyper aware of that, because for me, you know, and I'll be really transparent, you know, like I look sexy as shit naked, right? Like I work out, I eat healthy. Like I take really good care of
myself.
I take really good care of my physical body.
Yeah, you do.
And it's gotten me a lot, you know, like it's gotten me some great men. It's gotten me some asshole men, right? But the reality of it is it also at this stage in my life, you know, especially after having my last boyfriend, it was so beautiful to be in a container of a relationship where somebody loved me for me and not my body. And somebody loved me for who I was at my core and who I am at my soul level. And to have that, you know, that emotional connection and that peace, it was unbelievable. So for me to catch myself is if that attention comes my way from a like, oh, you're sexy, or you're or like a more of a physical attribute towards me, or like me even being like, oh, that guy is, you know, like, yes, I'm single now. And so it's like, if I find myself going, oh, he's hot, or like, ooh, I could, you know, like I could date him, or I could do, like, the catch for me is that was what was safe, what was comfortable. It was what I'd known, because it had gotten me a lot of things in my life. But the reality of it was and is that was all false. It was all false to the eye. It was everything that my eyes could see, but it was not everything that I can feel. So for me, I practice more now. How do I feel when I'm in the presence of people? I listen to my body and pay attention to my body and how I feel when I'm with, you know, somebody, like an intimate relationship, and I pay attention to that. Because that to me is more of my barometer versus what my physical eyes can see, you know? And so I have to catch myself, you know, like going, oh, like, hey, I'm hot. It doesn't work that way. Because when I do that, that's the energy that I put out, right? Is, you know, that you don't get what you want, you get what you are. So really being mindful of how I channel my sexual energy has become really important to me, to what I put out into the world. And again, knowing that that's what kept me safe, I catch myself. And usually what happens with me, Lance, is if something happens and it's like, oh, it's like that instant gratification, right? And I'm like, yeah, but that's not sustainable. Like, and I'll catch myself and I'm like, that's not it. That's not what I want. And so I do a really good job of catching it really quick. And that's back to what I talked about earlier, where the communication comes in too, right? So like, if you are whatever area that you find yourself going back to or reverting back to that's safe or comfortable, whether it's the athlete or the bartender, you've got to be willing to have a vulnerable conversation with whoever you're with to say, hey, this is what's going on, or this is where I need help. And lean into that place, right? And be vulnerable in that place, because you're fucking human.
Yeah.
You're human. And the new place that you're meant to go is scary as fuck, because you've not yet gone there. You've not yet had the experience. You've not given yourself the permission to have the experience.
Yeah. It's pretty bizarre, because, you know, for a while there, although I'm doing what I'm doing and, you know, going in one direction, when I started, I got back into the going out and drinking and dating apps. And then all of a sudden I'm like going out with these, you know, they're good people and all that, nothing bad, but like, I know that they're not somebody that I met them in the circumstances of the person that I was and not who I want to be. So why do I waste time dancing in that arena with somebody that I know is on, it's almost like I'm trying to like know that I can do that thing again. My ego's like, you still got it, you know, like
the
party guy. But like, I know that that behavior and what I'm doing, and if somebody is doing the things that I'm doing in that way, I know that that's not going to be the person that I want to be. So why waste time? But I did that for so long. And then I wonder why I haven't found somebody that I actually want to be at. But it's like, it's not what you want, it's what you are, like you said. So that's why sometimes it's hard, because when you're changing who you are and you're creating this new energy, it takes a while to kind of become that vibration and attract the people of the same equal vibration. It takes a while. If you're doing low vibrational activities and you're doing things that really aren't aligning with who you want to be, then you're full of shit. And you're going to attract the people like that, which is okay where they're at, but they're not where you want to be.
Yeah. And here's a nugget that I'll leave little share with you, is that especially in the health and wellness arena, most people fail to stick to their goals because their goals are focused on outcome based.
Yeah.
They're not focused on identity. So one of the techniques that I do with my clients is I do identity-based behaviors. So I always say to my clients, when it comes to who you want to become, what is the one word, just pick a word, what is that new identity that you want to embrace around health and wellness? What is that want to be? What do you want to be around in that arena? And so it makes their brain think a little bit. So whether I have a client that right now he's like, I want to be lighter. I have one that's like, I want to be calm and peaceful. You know, I say, okay, well, whatever that identity, one right now, another one is gentleman. I just want to be loving. I want to be loving. And then I said to him, are you loving to yourself? And he's like, no. So when you take the identity, you know, you just talked about shifting your old identity to a new identity. You choose a new identity, who you want to become. Just pick one word. And then from that one word, pick one behavior that you want to start practicing to invoke that new identity, right? So for me, if I want my identity to be, you know, loving, or, you know, carefree, or loving and open, right? That's who I want to be, versus hard and closed off. Practice communicate. So instead of texting, I practice picking up the phone, right? So that behavior that I invoke. So when you choose from identity-based, when you do an identity-based versus an outcome-based, you're likely to sustain that new behavior or that new habit for you long-term, because you're shifting your identity. Mm-hmm. It's not on the outcome, because we know to lose weight, we know, you know, like, okay, I want to be down 20 pounds. But what is that new identity that you're stepping into?
Yeah.
I'm fitter. Okay, well, what is that fitter person doing? What's the one thing they're doing?
It's the daily simple habits that make up who you are.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And those compound over time to become the person.
Yes, they do.
But like, you know how people want to like have these drastic, I'm going to be like this, so I got to do all this crazy drastic stuff. It's not even like that. It's the simple, littlest things consistently over time that make up who you are, your identity.
Yeah.
It's like if you do more of the things that don't align with who you want to be, well, then you're just going to stay the same.
Totally. Absolutely.
It makes sense. But I mean, sometimes it just needs to be unpacked. And for me, I know that alcohol is what always brings me down. And it's been a struggle. And people probably be like, well, why don't you just fucking give it up for good then? And hey, listen, believe me, I'm trying. I'm 2 or 3 weeks sober now. Again, I've done a year. I've done 9 months. So, you know, when you know that thing, but the thing just keeps on giving you a hard time.
Yeah.
That's totally. It's totally. It's challenging. You know?
The other piece that I invite you to do is practice rewarding yourself. So there's a really good book that for all of the listeners that are out there, it's called Atomic Habit. And it's by James Clear.
I'm going to show everybody on here.
It's on the shelf. Yep. That's it. So right there. Amazing. And that's what I'm talking about. Right. So he, in that book, talks about the identity, and then he talks about the routine or the reminder, the routine and the reward. And so what he talks about in that book is the reason why a lot of the times the new identity and the new behavior doesn't stick is you're failing to reward your small wins. Mm. So use the analogy. This is really simple. When you have a child that needs to potty train, what does a parent do? The first thing they do is they remind their kid, you got to go to the bathroom. So they remind the kid. The second thing they do, they take them to the bathroom, pull their pants down. They do the routine. They go pee or poop. And then last but not least, that parent rewards them. Good job, Susie or Bill. Here's something. Great job. And they reward them. And when they do that, the routine or the reminder, the routine, the reward over and over again, before you know it, guess what? That child is doing it on its own. Mm-hmm. It becomes an unconscious behavior. We as adults, we do a really good job of looking at the things that we're not doing right. That's why we go back to the old. I encourage focusing on the small rewards. I have a calendar in my bathroom that I have some personal things that I'm working on with my identity right now. And every day that I do the behavior, I write on the calendar, you're a fucking badass. Great job. You did it a day. And so all I'm doing is a positive feedback loop. Mm. And everything in Atomic Habit, he talks about that. Yeah. And that's really, really, really important when it comes to changing your lifestyle and changing who your identity is to being different.
It's a great book. He's very, and I like how the chapters are very short too. It's easy if you just got a little bit of time. Yep. Sometimes books can be overwhelming because people just, with reading, some people are really good at reading. Some people aren't as good at reading, you know, for a long period of time. And I enjoy that, how it's so easily laid out and you can just read a quick chapter and you almost feel better about yourself because you got one in. But some books, it's like, oh, if I don't read a whole chapter, this is the dialogue I have in my mind. I'm like, if I don't read a whole chapter, then it's like a fail. It's like weird little things. And I like how that book is laid out. So yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I want to dive in quickly about, I want to get into like your business and talk about your nutrition and your take on that, because I know that's really important and I want to highlight that. So walk us through a little bit more in detail about Epic Love and what is your perspective on nutrition? Maybe give us some insight into like what allows you to operate at the best performance.
It's that simple. Yeah. I eat real food. I absolutely eat real food. If I were to open up my pantry right now, like there's nothing really in my pantry. You know, if I were to open up my fridge, you know, it's stocked with fruits and vegetables and real food. And so the easiest thing that I'm all about simplifying. We do such a good job of complicating every fucking thing and all of these things and these diets and these things. And yes, at times things do have to get a little bit more complicated, especially if you have a health related disease. We've got to excavate and do multiple layers of healing the body. We know that the science shows us, right, to kind of auto-correct how far you've gone to your system. But the basic is by starting off with eating real food, you're going to feel fucking fantastic. Like, and I eat real food and my body loves real food. It's huge. And, you know, back to my trauma, by the time I was 8 years old, Lance, I had four of my teeth crowned and two of my permanent teeth pulled. And I mean, my dad didn't teach me proper hygiene. I was raised by my dad. I didn't know how to brush my teeth. I lived off soda and sugar, and I had four crowns by the time I was 7 years old and two of my permanent teeth pulled. So my hygiene was horrible from all the sugar that I ate as a kid, you know? So real food, definitely. It's that simple.
I love it. I love it. It is that simple, isn't it?
It is.
Just eat real food. Cut down on the shit.
Yep.
And that's what I say to people too. And I think Mark Sisson says it as well. It's like, it's not as much about putting in what you need to eat, but it's taking out a lot of the stuff. You don't need to add in a lot if you're taking out the shit.
Yep. Absolutely. You know?
Like if you're eating real vegetables, real meats, if that's your thing, just real things that grow.
Totally.
Grow on trees.
Absolutely.
Or you pick or whatever, wild or whatever.
And I would also say the other thing that I contribute to my health is I eat a large amount of fats. Mm. You know, your brain is over 80% of your brain tissue is made up of fat. When I did nutrition for kids, I taught about this all the time. I'm like, your brain is made of fat. And they're like, I got fat in my brain. Mm. You know, like in our hormones are all regulated. And Kingsbury talks about this.
Yeah.
Our hormones, you know, and our brain are operated strictly off of fats. When we are fat deprived, which 90% of Americans are, that's where you're going to have, you know, attention deficit disorder, depression, you know, can't focus, ADD, like all of these strings of this shit that comes along with it. Well, you're starving your brain, you know. Mm. So I eat probably first thing in the morning, I'm like consuming at least 60 grams of fat, like with all of my fun fats that I do, because my mental game is important. What I focus on, how I think, that is really important to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. That was a game changer for me, was getting into, this would have been probably 2011 or 2012. My first step to getting in was drinking like fat coffee, like bulletproof coffee back in the day, 2012. I remember telling people about it. They thought I was nuts, putting butter in your coffee. And, but that was where it all started, and doing intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. And allowing your body to just not be digesting food all the time. And there's some profound clarity that you get when you're operating in ketosis, or even, you know, people, you don't need to crave ketones all the time. People get obsessed with it. It's like, no, if your body is predominantly using fat as fuel, you're going to do a lot better. You don't need to go crazy. You don't need to, like, I don't know. There's obsessive
sure.
on both sides of the spectrum. Like for me, I just love a good quality piece of meat, you know, eggs, avocado, vegetables, whatever. Sometimes less. Sometimes I've toyed with the carnivore quite a bit, actually. I love it. Sometimes I want all veggies. I think intuitively we know what we need, and we can't ignore that.
Yep.
Like logically we think sometimes that certain things, but really we got to listen to like what we need.
100%.
And fats has been one of those things that has just been fucking game changer, speaking for mood and yep. weight loss, all that stuff. So
yeah. And for me, what's interesting, when a lot of clients come to me and I do, you know, coaching around nutrition and really helping them, you know, we take baby steps. Like it's not this jolt of removing everything or like this jolt of things. It's like slowly excavating for them to really help them to peel mm-hmm. back and introduce things. And again, back to the habit based and really helping them.
Yeah.
And they start to see like, holy shit, like I feel completely different, you know, and really educating them. And that for me is like the most amazing thing when I see that transformation with my clients. Like it brings me the most joy. It really does. Mm-hmm. Like food is so powerful. You know, I studied under Dr. Mark Hyman. I studied mm-hmm. under Dr. Andrew Wild. Andrew Wild is the old guy that used to go collect the mushrooms back in the day before cordyceps were a big
yeah.
thing. So he was my doctor, and you know, it's so powerful. And it can be so simple if you just, again, just focus on eating real food.
Mm.
And I promise, you know, life gets a lot better, you know.
Amazing. Where can we find you? Where can we check out all your work? Where's the best place to connect?
Epiclove.com, spelled with a U, not an O. So EPICLUV.com.
Awesome. We'll have it all in the show notes and Instagram and all that fun stuff.
Twitter, Pinterest. I'm on all of them.
Yeah, we'll have it all clear for everybody. Last question I always wrap it up with. I know you've kind of answered it already, but we'll ask it again anyway. Out of all the lessons of adversity that you've been through, what is one lesson that adversity has taught you that the listeners can walk away with today?
Adversity has taught me that I fucking matter, and that everything that I want fucking matters. And I'm that powerful to create it because I matter. And so do you.
I love it.
Yay.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's so good to connect. And it's rare that you get to have these one-on-one conversations with people and connect. Like even in real life, when you go for coffee or something there, like it's rare, like everyone's on their phones or there's always stuff. So I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on, and thank you for being such a bright light and shining your light on everybody, because someone like you that can get through this shit, it just gives hope for people. And well done. So thank you.
Yeah. I tell people, if I can do it, you can do it. You just have to know that the pain gets louder until you're willing to answer the call, like we did back in November with Fit for Service. We answered the call and we're here.
Hear that, everybody? Answer the call. Figure it out.
Answer it.
Figure out what's going on. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, everybody. Make sure to check out Melissa. Check out what she's up to. She's doing amazing things. Super inspiring. Such an awesome human. And I'm so grateful to call her a friend. So if you haven't already, make sure to smash that subscribe button on iTunes or Apple. It's all free. Leave us a review if you got value and share this with a friend. I love you guys. Appreciate you. Stay safe. Catch you next time.